welcome to Speaking with Joy, a podcast about books, beauty, and music. So get yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. Welcome back, everyone. I am happy to be speaking to you from bright blue and unbelievably cold St. Andrews in Scotland. It's funny, I've noticed recently that when the days are crisp and clear and lovely, like they are today, they are somehow even more cold. I'm sure that there is some science involved there that I don't know how to explain. But St. Andrews recently has just been descending into the coldness of winter, while at the same time having these absolutely sparklingly beautiful days. It's been really odd, though, because everyone's been complaining about the libraries being too cold. And, you know, a lot of them are very cold because they were built in the 14th and 15th centuries, so they don't have great heating. But recently I got an email from the Postgraduate Society that said that they would be giving out free blankets to any students who were cold in the library. So rather than fixing the heating, they have decided to go with giving people free wool blankets, which I think is absolutely hilarious. But last week, I was lucky to get to escape the cold of St. Andrews for a little bit and go see my sister in Oxford, which was absolutely wonderful. And I got to have my mom up here in St. Andrews, and it was a lovely self-imposed vacation. And it also gave me a lot to think about and a lot of the material for this week's podcast. Now, this week I'm starting something new. I am starting a once monthly episode that will be devoted to featuring art and topics concerning women, about women, and by women. So before I dive into that, I just wanted to tell you about my last week. So like I said, I kind of took a self-imposed break, and my mom got to be up here and we got to explore. And if you listened to last week's episode, you heard that we had all kinds of adventures and we ate and we talked, and it was just so fun. And I'm a lucky person to be able to say that my mother is one of my very, very best friends. And so we just had a blast and we discussed and talked about things and talked about the books we've been reading and the convictions we've had lately and what we think is happening in the world. And that was just so soul-filling. And then I got to go down and be with my sister in Oxford. And it has just become public news that she is pregnant with her first baby. And so it was, but at the same time, she's also finishing her first, or not her first book. She's written a couple books, but she's finishing a book. And it was just this wonderful time. We got to talk about what it would be like to have this new little person in the house. And we also hosted a big Thanksgiving dinner and we cooked and we talked about all the books we've been reading, and I showed her all my new favorite music. And it was just this absolutely soul-filling time. And I, you know, that combined with being with my mom and then being with Sarah, and then I talked to one of my best friends, Elena, I was just struck by how I have been surrounded by a great throng of mighty women in my lifetime who kind of don't fit into the mold of what any kind of list or formula of what women should be. Are. They are multifaceted. They think, they feast, they create, they give life with their bodies, but also with their kindness and their generosity and their intellect. And I was just struck this weekend by kind of the capaciousness of womanhood, that there is so much that we can hold in being women. We can be strong and wise and gentle. And I was struck also by the fact that I think that that kind of the tension of that is something that's not often really explored or depicted. And then I was thinking about what a confusing time it is to be a woman, you know? I think it's hard to live well into that identity in our culture. You know, you're pulled in many different directions. It can be confusing to know how to own our strength and our power, but also to let ourselves be gentle and vulnerable. And those are both valuable and good things. And it can be difficult when our world seems to kind of sell us two narratives of either devoting yourself to completely a career or devoting yourself only to family, and the ways that we give those things value or don't give those things value. And I was thinking about all those narratives and thinking about how simplistic they are when you hold them up to these really wonderful women that I know in my life. And I know many of you listeners are such wonderful women. So that kind of provided for me the inspiration to begin this monthly episode, which will be just a woman-fied version of my normal episodes, looking at life through women's perspective. And I think that my goal for this is that I think that sometimes our imaginations can become limited about what it means to be a full-bodied and mighty woman. And I think the only way to remedy that is to introduce a capaciousness back to our understanding of womanhood by giving ourselves a different imagination, by broadening what we can imagine what it is like to be a woman, what it could mean to do that well. So these podcasts every month, which, like I said, will be dedicated to featuring art and topics concerning women, about women, and by women, kind of seeks to, in a creative way, broaden our imaginations about that, kind of give us a more full, more complex view of what it could be to be a woman. And we'll do that first by considering the ways women do things. So this week is going to be called Women Know Things, and we'll be looking at the tradition of Lady Wisdom and the tradition of women as instructors and scholars and wise women. But, you know, in other weeks it might be women deciding, women making friends, women falling in love. We'll be looking at that through various art and how that's been explored. And then we'll be bringing in talented artists and thinkers and writers and musicians who are women. And I'm bringing them to light not just because they are women, but because they are excellent and they give us models for that kind of capacious and complex way of being a woman. And because I think they are often overlooked. And so I just want to provide a space where we can look to different examples of women who have thought and created well. And finally, just to be able to look at the way these experiences of life, women's experiences of life, have been portrayed for better or ill, and think about how that could shape how we think about the world. So really, it's just taking this podcast and its very specific, you know, goal of kind of helping us think about the world better through art, and looking at that specifically through women artists and through topics about women. So that's something I'm really excited about, because I think women are great, and I love being a woman, and I think it'll be an interesting thing to explore. I should also add that I also love men, but I don't have a ton to add on the subject of being a man. but all that to say, I still think that these episodes will be very applicable to men, because I think you would enjoy the women artists every bit as much as you would the men artists. So, without further ado, we will dive into this week's episode. And this week, I'm going to be centering, it's called Women Know Things, we'll be centering around women and wisdom. And we'll be looking at the tradition of women as kind of the archetype of Lady Wisdom, which I'll introduce you to in just a moment. And we'll be looking at several pieces of art. We're going to start with literary, and that will be kind of two pieces. We're going to read Proverbs 8 and 9, which kind of has this very famous depiction of Lady Wisdom. And then we'll look at Lark Rise to Candleford, which is a semi-autobiographical work of a woman growing up in the turn of the century in the countryside of England. And then we will look to some famous images of St. Anne teaching Mary to read and how that influenced the way we think about literacy in the medieval era. And then finally, we'll look at quite a boss of a woman, Hildegard of Bingen, who is a doctor of the church, a musician, a doctor, like an actual medical doctor, and a creator of her own language. And we'll be looking at all of this through the lens of women and wisdom. So let us dive in. So the first thing I'm going to talk to you about this week is, to kind of set it up, is I want to read to you from this passage in Proverbs 8 and 9. Now, Proverbs, of course, is in the Old Testament or the Hebrew Bible, and it's basically just a book of practical wisdom. And one of the things that it employs as a literary device are these kind of archetypes. So throughout it, you have this image of the fool. Now, it's funny because Proverbs is like in the introduction, it's written to the children of Solomon. So he's kind of trying to instruct his children about how to be wise. You know, one of the things he really advises is not marrying 800 women, which supposedly Solomon did. So he's trying to advise them how to have a good, a righteous, and in many ways an easy life. So in doing that, he employs these kind of archetypes. One of them is the fool, and that's kind of who you don't want. And that's not to say it's a real person. It's kind of an embodiment of these of foolishness. And then you also have the embodiment of folly, and she is embodied as a woman who kind of leads everyone down to destructive ways. And then some of the other famous archetypes are, you have the archetype of people generally just call her the Proverbs 31 woman, and you know, there's much talk about that, but she is an archetype. That's something I always want to get in people's minds, is people will say, oh well, she's just, you know, no one could do everything the Proverbs 31 woman does. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course. She's
You're not supposed to. She's an archetype. She is an embodiment of principles and ideas, not an actual woman. And that is true of Lady Wisdom as well. And hold on, I'm going to grab my book. So that is true of Lady Wisdom as well, who is this embodiment of wisdom. And it is, she is depicted as a woman. And I'm going to read you a woman who stands and calls out to the foolish and tries to instruct them in the ways, in her own ways, her ways that bring life. So it's incredibly poetic and beautiful. So I'm going to read you just some passages from her. All right. Listen as wisdom calls out. Hear as understanding raises her voice. On the hilltop along the road, she takes her stand at the crossroads. By the ancient gates to the entrance of the town, on the roads leading in, she cries aloud. I call to all of you. I raise my voice to all people. You simple people, use good judgment. You foolish people, show some understanding. Listen to me, for I have important things to tell you, and everything that I say is right, for I speak the truth and detest every kind of deception. My advice is wholesome. There is nothing devious or crooked in it. For wisdom is more valuable than rubies. Nothing you can desire can compare to it. Okay, I'm going to skip down a little bit to this kind of amazing part where she's talking about the creation of the world. For the Lord formed me from the beginning. I was appointed in ages past. I was born before the oceans were created, before the springs bubbled forth their waters, before the mountains were formed, before the hills, I was born. Before he had made the earth and the fields and the handfuls of soil. I was there when he established the heavens, when he drew the horizon on the oceans. I was there when he set the clouds above, when he established springs deep in the earth. I was there when he set the limit of the seas, so that they would not spread beyond their boundaries, and when he marked off the earth's foundations. I was the architect at his side. I was his constant delight. All right, and then I'm going to skip down one more bit, and then we'll talk about all of this. This is the next chapter. Wisdom has built her house. She has carved its seven columns. She has prepared a great banquet. She has sent her servants to invite everyone to come. She calls from the heights overlooking the city. Come in with me, she urges the simple. To those who lack good judgment. Come eat my food and drink the wine I've mixed. Leave your simple ways behind and learn and begin to live. Learn to use good judgment. Okay, so I skipped around in there, but hopefully you get the idea that it's this personification as of wisdom as this kind of mighty woman who has built her house, who's creating a banquet, who's calling people to follow her ways. And then it goes this kind of incredibly poetic bit where she's talking about standing with God at the creation of the world as the architect at his side, which I think is such a kind of amazing image. And I think this is often an overlooked part of Proverbs. People talk about, you know, the Proverbs 31 woman, but they don't talk about this archetype of wisdom as a woman calling out to people, preparing a table. And I think it's significant in two ways. It's significant first because it has personified wisdom as feminine, but it shapes our way of thinking about wisdom, that wisdom is not like this masculine trait, you know, that women, that, you know, men are smart and they know things, but that wisdom can be conceived of as a womanly trait. But also that it gives us this, you know, archetype of what womanhood could be like, that womanhood could be this embodiment of Lady Wisdom who knows things, who calls out to people, who instructs, who rebukes. It's also interesting if you'll notice that wisdom is greater than rubies. And if you grew up in a kind of Christian realm like I did, I'm sure that you heard the Proverbs 31 bit where it says a righteous wife is more valuable than rubies. And so that's kind of a correlation that it's like the righteous wife, but also this awesome instructor, Lady Wisdom. And those things are kind of connected. I think there's several elements to her wisdom, to what we can pull out of this character, this archetype. There's a practical wisdom in that she is admonishing the fool. She's telling him on a very basic level how to have success, how to have good relationships, good finances, how to not get caught doing evil things, which is to say, how to not do evil things. And this is not only a knowledge, but it's a discretion. I think that's the difference between wisdom and knowledge. You can know things, but wisdom knows, and she knows how to apply and to the ability to actually use in practical circumstances, this wisdom. So it's a practical wisdom. She's calling out to fools and telling them, I can teach you how to live a better life. But it is also a moral wisdom. One of the bits says she hates pride and arrogance, corruption and perverse speech. That's verse 13 and 8 in chapter 8. So she's not just a practical wisdom, but she is a moral wisdom. And she sees morality as tied up inherently with pain and suffering. So what I mean by that is, if you read through Proverbs, there's kind of this idea of it, that part of the reason we do, not the only reason we do good, but part of the reason we do good is because when we do bad things, it hurts us. And when we do good things, it will prosper us. And that's one of kind of the ideas tied up in Proverbs. And she is this person who is teaching them this moral wisdom. And she teaches this principle of pain and suffering to the extent that there's a verse where she says, I will turn and laugh when disaster strikes you. And she's saying that because if you follow the principles of goodness, then you shouldn't have disaster strike you from your own foolishness. So she's a teacher of moral wisdom. There's also this sense, though, of a transcendent or a spiritual wisdom, which I think is really beautifully illustrated through the idea of being present with God at creation, being the architect at his side, and speaking of the boundaries of the world. So the whole kind of poetic arc of that is to see this world as one in which God has drawn lines, you know, things that you don't pass, and that this kind of presents this this way of the world, that wisdom is kind of woven into the boundaries and the way of things. And this speaks to the holy wisdom, which we'll talk about in a minute, that there's something that is knitted into the world of the wisdom that goes just beyond practical or moral, but kind of the order of things. And that she is a master and a teacher of all of these, of the practical, of the moral, and of the transcendent. And how does she teach this? And this is what I think is such an interesting, also an interesting depiction of both wisdom, but also of womanhood. She sets a banquet. This is not just someone who's going to pull out their whiteboard and teach someone. She sets a banquet with sweet wines and good food. She calls out to people in the streets. So she's someone who is actively teaching and initiating. Like I said earlier, she mocks. I think this is a really interesting, I kind of love it. It's kind of an interesting idea that sometimes foolishness doesn't deserve to be rebuked. It just deserves to be laughed at. It deserves to go, well, that's stupid. You shouldn't have done that. So she mocks. And this reminds me of one of my mentors all through high school would always say to me, Joy, God forgives, but wisdom doesn't. And that being the sense of, you can be forgiven and move on from any mistake you make in your life, but there will always be these consequences. And that's part of what wisdom teaches, is that your actions will return to you. So she sets a banquet, she calls out, she mocks, she instructs. You know, this is her role, is to teach the foolish. And she says that. She rebukes, she leads people in paths of wisdom. So this is an incredibly powerful archetype to me of wisdom. And I love that it is personified as a woman. And that as such, this is something that I can attach myself to, and I can think about what would it look like for me to be a Lady Wisdom. And I don't think it's insignificant that this is given as a role to women. A lot of the things that she does, you could kind of think, that makes sense of someone who would be a mother or someone who'd be a teacher or someone when, you know, this is a natural role. It's kind of giving this sense of teaching wisdom and instruction and rebuking. It gives it as a natural role to women. It's not something that's surprising to you. It's kind of saying, well, this makes sense as a womanly thing, so we can imagine that. So we see this mighty woman as an instructor of the foolish, chastening and guiding them. And so some other further examples you could see of this archetype being played out is, this is played out even in the New Testament. Jesus speaks of wisdom as a woman when he says, Son of man came eating and drinking, they say. Behold, a gluttonous and wine bibber, blah, blah, blah. Then he ends the sentence with saying, but wisdom is justified by her deeds. So Jesus continues this idea of the archetype of Lady Wisdom. And this began also to be a tradition even in like the early church with the idea of Hagia Sophia, which is called the Holy Wisdom, which is sometimes depicted as this character from Proverbs. And there's a beautiful church. It was a basilica, and then it was taken over and turned into a mosque, and now it's a museum in Turkey named the Hagia Sophia, which is named after this Holy Wisdom, which kind of receives its tradition from Proverbs and from Lady Wisdom. So it's this kind of mighty tradition of wisdom being personified as a woman. And I absolutely love it because I think it gives us a different image of womanhood than we are often used to. You know, I think many of us can say that we have experienced from the inane to the obtuse to the offensive, this idea that women have been characterized as retiring, intuitive, not intellectual. But this presents a woman as instructive, initiating, a mistress of her domain, a maker of feasts, and kind of this teacher, this master of wisdom in this distinctly womanly way. The idea of wisdom as a woman, and therefore as women embodying Lady Wisdom, therefore pops up all over literature and storytelling. So like I said, this is kind of more of an archetype. It's not meant to be an actual woman. And so in that way, we don't have to say, I'll beat myself up if I'm not that way. But I think this archetype repeats itself all through literature. And a particularly fun example of this is in the story of Larkrise to Candleford. Now, I was introduced to Larkrise to Candleford through the television show, which is absolutely worth watching. But it's also, it's taken from the journals and the autobiographical novels by Flora Thompson. And it's about these two countryside towns, which she kind of names for the novel, Larkrise to Candleford. I think they were named something else in real life. And this girl, Laura, who is from Larkrise, which is this little tiny hamlet town, and Candleford's more of kind of like a little bustling town with things in it. And she goes to become a postmistress and lives with this kind of famously amazing postmistress, Miss Lane. And it's about the stories between them. But something I love, and that pertains to this week, is that you have in both of these towns these kind of Lady Wisdom characters who rule the roost, and they are the people to whom other people come when they experience difficulties and when they need advice. And these two characters are Miss Dorcas Lane, who is the postmistress of Candleford, and Queenie, who is the beekeeper and kind of the old matriarch of Larkrise. They are the ones people come to for wisdom, practical, moral, and transcendent. And it's interesting how many ways they kind of reflect. I don't know if they actually are meant to. I don't think they are. But to me, I thought, this is such a good example of this kind of womanhood being portrayed. They are every bit as womanly as they could be while embodying this fullness of practical, moral, transcendent wisdom. So Miss Lane, here are some ways in which she kind of reflects and embodies this Lady Wisdom. She is known for her feasting, so she's always having people over for dinners, and it makes me think of the, that it says that Lady Wisdom prepares her banquet, and that over her table is kind of a place of power and of being able to teach and guide people. She also runs the post office and therefore knows everyone's business and tells everyone's, and therefore gives everyone their advice. And something else that she's famous for is she is a teaser. She has a great sense of humor, and she often teases those who come to her for advice playfully and kindly. And it kind of reminds me of the mocking wisdom of Lady Wisdom. You know, that there are moments where the fool doesn't need to be rebuked, he just needs to be giggled at. And I think there is a great deal of wisdom in that. I was talking with someone recently about how I was thankful that I had siblings because I feel like some of my character flaws, they took out of me not by having great deep wisdom, but by being teased, by kind of, you know, figuring things out by the social pressure of family. And she kind of embodies that, and she teases them. But then we have Queenie, she's this older woman, she's the beekeeper. And because she's a beekeeper, she is always kind of tied in with this sense of natural wisdom. She somehow kind of knows a supernatural wisdom of the earth, and she always knows what herbs, and there's almost kind of a magical, like, dreamy quality to some of her wisdom, in a way that you could only have pre-Industrial Revolution. She's also the home to all the lost children. So whenever people are found without parents or when something goes wrong, hers is the home they go to. And that kind of reminds me of this picture of Lady Wisdom as the person who goes and gathers. She is also, ironically, married to the Fool, Twister Turl. So he's kind of this character who's almost like he's just like an archetypal fool. He's like the town jester, and he always does everything wrong, and he's always too flustered, and he always makes the wrong decision, and he always gets confused. And yet he's married to this incredibly wise and forbearing woman, Queenie, to whom everyone goes for wisdom. But I think that their relationship is actually kind of an image of wisdom, the wisdom that beckons back, that forgives, that mocks, that chastens, but that accepts. And she kind of shows that part of wisdom is not holding grudges, but being wise and being patient. And I just love both of them as kind of depictions and embodiments of this capacity that women have to be those who are wise, both in practical senses of knowing what to do and how to live, but also of being learned. You know, for Miss Lane, she is a reader of books and she has a big library that everybody knows about. And then for Queenie, she's learned in the ways of the earth and of bees and of kind of the natural world that she's tied in with a wisdom that not everybody else is tied into. So they can be practical, they can be learned, that they can be also tied in with, you know, relational wisdom, and that they are the people who instruct and care for and kind of call people back to wisdom. And I think that's such an inspiring kind of way to imagine these lady wisdoms in their world. So those are our two literary examples, looking at women knowing things in this kind of image of lady wisdom that we can keep in our minds of a woman who is wise, who instructs, who calls out, who rebukes. And I think that's really interesting. So now we're going to move on to our visual example. And of course, as usual, I have all the links to these things online in my blog, which I'll put in the description. And I would really, really encourage anyone who wants to go watch or stream. You can get it on Amazon, Lark Rise to Candleford. It's just so soul-filling and kind of innocent and lovely, and they're beautifully done. And I love how there's kind of this almost like a magical realism, that there's this little, even though it's just placed in an ordinary Hamlet and they don't really, you know, acknowledge that, there's always this kind of inbreaking of something unique or magical or different. So definitely check that out. And then the next, so as we're going on to the visual examples, I have all of these through the blog, so you can go look at them. So the visual examples is something I stumbled upon last year and I found so fascinating and kind of inspiring. And they are images of Saint Anne, who is held in tradition to be Mary's mother, teaching Mary to read. So if you look through these, there's a whole bunch of different examples of this, and they're usually, you see Mary, Mother of Jesus, leaning over a book and Anne teaching her to read. These all kind of started to come about they proliferated in a unique way during the kind of like 14th century medieval era, and they appeared everywhere. They came in stained glass windows in colleges of places like Oxford. They showed up in illuminated manuscripts of the Gospels. They appear in tapestries and paintings, and they just kind of begin to pop up everywhere. And what they are depicting is Anne teaching Mary to read, which I think is a really interesting thing. So you may say, okay, well, there's nothing about that in the Bible, so where did that come from? And where it came from is people started to kind of ask, okay, so if you read Luke, you know that there's this bit called Magnificat, which is an incredibly famous, it's Mary's song that she sings, that she composes when she meets with Elizabeth, her cousin, who's the mother of John the Baptist. And I'm just going to read you a little bit of it. It's famous, the reason it's called Magnificat is because it opens with, "My soul doth magnify the Lord," which in Latin is Magnificat. "My spirit has rejoiced in God my Savior, for he has regarded the lowliness of his handmaid. And henceforth all generations shall call me blessed, for he that is mighty hath magnified me. His mercy is on them that fear him through all generations. He showed the strength of his arm. He scattered the proud in the imagination of their hearts. He put down the mighty from their seat. He has exalted the humble and the meek. He has filled the hungry with good things, and the rich he has sent away empty. So then it goes on. And it's this beautiful, poetic, but kind of, it's kind of proclamatory. Like I went to a lecture recently with a biblical scholar who said that this is kind of written in the style of the prophets. So Mary is kind of giving a word of God, and the word of God is that the mighty will be taken down from their throne, and the humble will be exalted, and the hungry will be filled with good things. It's kind of a rebuke of those in power who are corrupt, coming from this presumably young girl. So when you read this, almost every single line of this psalm or this song references in really clever and insightful and learned ways the Hebrew Bible. So she is referencing prophecies and psalms and the law in this really intelligent and an artistic way. So people started to say, well, how did she know scripture? You know, she's a woman. She didn't necessarily, in that era, it was not normal to be educated. And so there's kind of a tradition that explained this, that she had been taught to read in an exceptional way. She's part of a priestly family, so we know from Zechariah. She'd been taught to read and to know the scriptures through her mother's teaching, and she was kind of a dedicated person at the temple. And because of that, she has this mastery of what for her era would have been the text to be educated by, both intellectually and spiritually. So in the medieval era, this became embraced, both embraced and inspired by, people were inspired to the education of their children by this story, by the idea of Mary being someone who is learned and Anne being the one that taught her. So in medieval era, there started to be this proliferation of literacy. You know, before then, it was only if you were really, really educated were you able to read. And, you know, there were a few kings who were kind of exceptional because they purposely made sure their daughters were as educated as their sons. But this wasn't normal because they didn't necessarily need to be for the roles that they played in that era. And in this article that I attached to in my blog, the author writes, "The image of Saint Anne teaching the Virgin Mary to read encouraged the systematic literacy of medieval children." So as this story began to be proliferated and this idea began to arise that, you know, that Mary had learned to read at Saint Anne's knee, it became like this primary goal. She continues to write, "The fact is understandable since the woman by her leading status of the domestic space was the only one who could handle the education and schooling of children, it began to be kind of this tradition that if you were a good mother, you would teach your children to read. And this sparked this movement towards literacy, both for women and for people in general." And so then we see that women and mothers began to be seen as educators, not just in the practical skills of life, but of scripture, of language, and of learning. And for that era, like I was saying, this wasn't something that was just perceived as just, you know, a religious learning. It was also, that was how you became a master of the texts of your day, of Latin, and of learning. And so this image kind of taught this idea that the women of their homes ought to be scholars, ought to be people who owned and knew scriptures and knew Latin and were able to teach it. And it all came from this image of Mary learning to read at St. Anne because they knew that she had this incredibly rich theological text drawn from the Hebrew scriptures. So that leads me very naturally into our third and musical example, which I can't wait to play for you. It's just haunting. Who was an example of just such an educated and wise medieval woman. And that is the amazing Hildegard of Bingen, or Hildegard von Bingen. Hildegard von Bingen lived from, let's see if I can pull it up here. She lived from 1098 to 1179. She was a nun. She was a Benedictine abbess, writer, philosopher, Christian mystic, visionary, polymath, and most notably, the first female hymnist that we know of, that produced a lot. So she wrote music and hymns. She is considered to be the founder of scientific natural history, which is basically just to say pre-modern era, that was like the founder of looking at science, basically, in Germany. She was the head of her order, elected without contest by her fellow nuns. She wrote the earliest surviving morality play, which was a really a huge movement in the medieval ages as well. And she also wrote theological, botanical, and medicinal texts, as well as letters, liturgical songs, and poems, while supervising illuminations, illuminated manuscripts. She also is famous for having made up her own language, which is fun, and I was looking it up. There, it's interesting because she made this, and I guess she made it to write notes to herself because no one ever deciphered it. So they have like a list of some of the words they know, but in general, they don't actually know what any of it means. And I was reading it today, and I thought I would tell you that it features a lot of Z's, which, you know, I feel like Z doesn't get used a lot, so go Hildegard for using Z as much as she can. So Hildegard was quite a woman. She was a scholar and a mystic and a writer, and she was also not afraid to kind of to lead and to throw her weight around when she needed to. There was a moment where she was looking for a new monastery for her group of her fellow sisters and nuns, and this abbot wouldn't give in, and so she got sick and wouldn't move and was paralyzed, and she attributed this to him not letting her move, and so finally he gave in and finally decided to give her the monastery. But it's kind of interesting to read the story because you're like, wait, did she just tell him that she was paralyzed so that they couldn't move from the monastery so she could have it? So anyway, she's this very interesting character who is definitely an embodiment of a woman who has a mastery of both learned knowledge in the sense that she's educated, and there's a whole story behind that, but also that she was kind of this leader of her group, that she was wise in practical wisdom. And also that she had the skill of, she did beautiful music, and that she was truly, when you read, I'm going to attach some of these links, but she was actually a really kind of inventive composer. And something that's interesting, and this is also actually the original reason why I picked her, is that she wrote music specifically about Lady Wisdom, Holy Wisdom, embodied, you know, in this way of imagining wisdom as a woman. So in her grandest, she was also kind of a mystic, and so she would write about these visions that she'd have. So in her grandest visionary work, which is this is going to be me reading Latin very poorly, Liber Divinorum Operum, she writes about the order of the world, which kind of gets back to that vision of Proverbs 9, of the world having this internal order and these boundaries. And she writes about the divine attributes that make it that way, and which are like love and wisdom, so caritas and Sophia, and she writes about these as embodied as these womanly figures, which of course she's not just making up, she's getting that from this tradition. And so I'm going to play for you this lovely movement from one of her pieces, which is called O Virtus Sapientia, and that means O the Virtue of Wisdom. And I just find it really haunting and beautiful, and it has this drone underneath that you can hear, which is kind of just the remaining note. We're going to listen to this together and we can talk about it a little bit.
Thank you.
Isn't that just absolutely hauntingly beautiful? So you can look up what the lyrics all mean, but it's basically just this depiction of wisdom as this principle woven into the universe, the boundaries and the ways that things work and the intricacy of it all, but presented as this woman singing it out. And I just think how beautiful it is that she wrote about this while also in her own life embodying that wisdom and that capacity to instruct and to teach, to rebuke in her own life and to be knowledgeable, to be a woman of intellect, while she also wrote about Lady Wisdom. And I would really encourage you to listen to the rest of her Canticles of Ecstasy, which I will have a link to, and to read more about her. Another thing to know about her is that she is a doctor of the church. So other examples of that would be like St. Augustine or Aquinas. They're both doctors of the church, which means that they have kind of, in the Roman Catholic Church, there's a, they have a certain weight to their theology and their writings, and that she also has that weight, which I just think is really, she's quite a woman to be reckoned with and someone to really be looked to and talked about. So those are my three pieces of art today. We've looked at Proverbs 8 and 9 and this depiction, this kind of archetype, this way that we can imagine both wisdom as womanly and women as wise, that presents us with someone who has practical and moral and transcendent wisdom, who sets a banquet, who calls out, who instructs. And we looked at how that kind of practical wisdom is embodied in Miss Lane and Queenie and Largesse de Candleford. And then we looked at how a more kind of intellectual and a learned wisdom could be thought about through the representations of Anne teaching Mary to read, and how that influenced kind of a movement towards literacy and towards mothers being kind of the instructors and the intellectual husbandry work of their homes, as they saw that as their role to carry on an intellectual tradition in their homes in the medieval era. And then finally, through kind of the incredible embodied life of a Lady Wisdom, of Hildegard von Bingen, who was known for her writings, for her philosophy, for everything from philosophy to medicine to music, that she was truly someone who embodied the ability to be wise, but then also that she wrote about this divine wisdom as pictured as a woman who teaches, who nurtures, and who brings people to a way of wisdom. So to end up, I want to say, so what? What should we make of all of this? What should we think of? Why does it matter? And specifically, how does this expand our imagination of what it could be like to be a woman? And I think that there are three things that we can draw from this. First, it is to remind us simply that women have the capacity to be wise, to possess wisdom. And this can range from the practical wisdom of Miss Lane, who knows how to live her life well, who knows how to not have the pain of bad decisions. But it can also extend to the wisdom of intellect, mastering the scriptures like Mary or Anne, and also a wisdom that is spiritual and authoritative, like Hildegard of Bingen's and her wisdom of writing. And so that's one thing it can remind us of, that women have the capacity to be wise. And secondly, that in wisdom, women are also powerful instructors. We see Lady Wisdom teaching the fool, Miss Lane and Queenie being the ones to whom people come, Hildegard being the leader of her other nuns, and you know, she had these close relationships even with the other monks, that she was this kind of woman of wisdom and instruction. And that this instruction is not always, you know, docile and, you know, kind of bowing down, but that it is humorous and mighty, and that it can rebuke, but that it can also be subversive and can be influenced through feasting and drawing people in. And the final thing I think it teaches us is that such wisdom in women is something that takes intentional cultivation. So if we want to begin to fashion ourselves into the sort of woman who is wise, this is not something that just comes about naturally. I love that the depiction in Proverbs 9 of wisdom laying her table, there's a sense of her intentionally pursuing being a person of wisdom and drawing people into that. And when I think about Hildegard, that she was a scholar, she took work, she took time to become like that, and that even the whole image of Anne and Mary came because people knew that there had to be a background to the Magnificat, that it had to come out of something, and that came out of study. And that makes me think, well, I want to be like that, so I must too be intentional and purposefully cultivate wisdom and knowledge and discretion in me. So all this is to say that this week, art has taught us that women can know things and that it is pretty powerful when they do. And I think that is something that I will go into my week and my learning feeling inspired by. So that is me for this week. I hope that you learned something, and I hope that you can go sniff around my blog and find the links so you can learn more about anything that interested you. If you enjoyed this week's podcast, I would ask you to please subscribe on iTunes and leave a rating and a review if you're willing. And my one request this week also would be, if you liked this, please send it to one friend that you think would enjoy the podcast. So that is me, everybody. I hope you'll have lovely weeks, and we'll be back to my normal episodes next week. And I will talk to you all soon. Have a lovely week.